Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome to Here District. I am the captain of this vessel on this, I guess we could call it a fantastic voyage, Chris. Encompasses all the ups and downs and the twists yes. and turns and the highs and lows of the NBA season. So I'm trying to put the lipstick on a pig, I guess. No. But it's the fantastic voyage. Chris Johnson, my first mate, we're the only father and son combination in the history of college basketball to win a national championship at the same school. Go Bruins. So I always got to put that in. And then our guest today, been around this league for the better part of two decades, from what I understand. You can correct me if I'm wrong. He's written for the Sacramento Bee, Sports Illustrated. Now he is doing his thing at The Athletic, one of my favorite publications, Sam Amick. Welcome to Here District, man. Thank you, Sam, for joining us.
Marcus, Chris, appreciate you guys having me. Good to see you. Like we were just talking about off air, we didn't connect, but I got to see you in passing the other day on your little West Coast voyage. But, you know, I'm here for the lipstick on the pig. Let's do it.
and I say that because we had a big production meeting before our game on the 2nd, maybe of January. I believe that was the Wizards or the Hornets. I'm getting the two. I think it may be the Hornets. But we talked about what this team needed to do in terms of New Year's resolutions and focus and intentness and all these nice buzzwords that you hear and what they could do because the Pistons struggled last year at this point in time around the turn of the year and they 30-11 or whatever it was the second part of the season and you saw how their season went and it looked good initially. But then it just hasn't been sustainable so far for this team. So that's why I make that comment. But let's talk about your job covering the NBA in terms of what you're looking at. And I don't want to get to Giannis and his situation right now. You wrote that excellent article. But it's the trade season, and the first domino, as they say, with Trae Young going from Atlanta to the Wizards has fallen. Just your overview in terms of the activity that you anticipate, the big names that may be involved, that may not be involved. Just your insider information, Sam, or insider opinion. Let me put it that way.
Sure. Yeah, okay. We can do a little bit of both. It's a really unique trade season to me from the standpoint of you mentioned the big names. Like we do have big names in play. We have star power in the conversation, but as we're seeing, like, man, we don't have a lot of market for a lot of those guys. You have teams that really would like to get off of those players. When you talk about Trae Young getting to Washington, you talk about Ja Morant, his situation in Memphis, LaMelo Ball in Charlotte. And I think around the league and even today having conversations with people, everybody's really struck by this new world where, like a player like Trae could go to the Wizards, you know, for seemingly a bag of chips. No disrespect to the players that came back, but you're talking about CJ McCollum and on the back end of his career, and Corey Kispert, a young guy who's good, but this is not the old days. Desmond Bane went to Orlando for, an exceptional amount of picks in first rounders in the summer. Desmond Bane doesn't have the star power of any of the guys that I mentioned. So a couple takeaways for me is, from one, I think this collective bargaining agreement is having a domino effect in the way teams do business. You just can't have massive money, but specifically massive money with players that are known as one-way players. And every guy that I mentioned does have that reputation. So it's just, that's my first, kind of thought is that, star power galore, but I'm really curious to see A, if these guys move like Ja, and B, what the return ends up being.
So you mentioned first round draft picks, and so now, I don't believe there's one involved in the. Was there a first round pick in the Trae Young deal?
No.
The note that I have is that since the 2025, the league calendar year began July 1st, only one first round pick has been included in a trade, and just your thoughts on why teams are just hoarding, guarding these first round picks. unlike they have in past. I mean, Desmond Bain, we talked about him. I mean, how many picks were involved? He was a guy that had several picks, four first rounders in a swap for Bain. San Antonio, three first rounders. I mean, what's going on? Is this a trend that you think will continue, or is it just kind of an anomaly of what the current status is?
Well, I mean, part of it is that the apron system, the luxury tax system that they put into place, and especially once you get to the second apron, it's a virtual hard cap, right? So, you know, you have teams that are terrified of all the limitations that come with that system. It's not just a matter of the money you spend, you know, the exorbitant kind of 3X, 4X, 5X money once you get into the higher aprons. It's the fact that the Cleveland Cavaliers are a good example. I believe they're the only team above the second apron. And they have all kinds of stuff they love to do with their roster. They can't do any of it. You can't aggregate players in the trade. You can't bring in any additional money. Like if you even do one for one, you've got to send, more out than you get back, or the other way around. Sorry. And so with that in mind, draft picks have become one of the cheat codes, one of the workarounds and the, you know, relatively economical deals. And where if you obviously draft well, then, you know, you can have an impact player on your books at a price that is not nearly as problematic. So, I guess to take it back to even the Jaws situation, and even Jonathan Kuminga is another one that's in the news. In my neck of the woods, I'm based in Sacramento. You know, they've been involved in the Kuminga stuff. Well, they had a first rounder protected on the table with the Warriors in the summertime. It was going to be top 12. And they've changed their stance on that. They took the first off the table and said, nope, whatever we do there, there's not going to be a first. You know, if they were looking at a Ja Morant situation, which they are really not for the most part, never say never, but only if it's like a giveaway, they're not going to send any draft capital out for a player like Ja. And I don't think they're alone. So, I think in this time when teams are really struggling to make the numbers work on their books, draft picks are becoming like the security blanket that makes them feel a little bit better.
Wow. So basically, Stan, there's two different sort of trade asset classes that exist now as far as in who you're going to deal for. There's a two-way guy that commands a certain bounty. Then there's like a Trey Young or these offensive heavy guys that don't have the defensive stuff that you're going to get a lot less for. Do you think that that's going to stay into place as long as we have the second apron or the apron system, or until something changes in the foreseeable future?
I do, but I also think, you know, it's probably not just the CBA. It's the way the game has changed. It's the fact that, you know, even if you look at, you know, the MVP rankings, like Luka all of a sudden has become to me like kind of the only guy. He certainly doesn't get a pass when it comes to his poor defense, but he is so exceptional offensively that we still have him as a top three, top five player, right? But Giannis is a two-way player. Wemby, who looks like he's going to take over the basketball world here pretty soon, obviously a two-way player. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, a two-way player. Even, you know, Joker, Nikola Jokic, certainly not a defensive, you know, elite defensive player, but he has gotten better. They have had elite defenses with him in the middle. And if you talk to coaches, it's like it's gotten better on that end. So just from a purely basketball standpoint and the philosophy of the game, you are seeing without question a shift where people are saying, no, we need you to guard. It's not okay to leave that on your teammates like, you know, maybe the last era did.
Well, and to your point, I mean, Joker, I'm not sure where he's at last year. I know last year for a stretch, he was leading the league in steals. And so, you know, he was making
very
active, making himself, you know, a factor defensively. He may not be shutting you down on ball defense, denying you, but he's making himself a factor. So yeah, I'm right there with you on that. Okay, I'm going to give you a list of names. I just want you to tell me, and then you expound on it how you want to, Sam. Likely to be traded or not? Okay, so we'll start with Anthony Davis.
I'm going to lean towards not. I thought it was, without question, likely to be traded. This hand injury, he's not going to have surgery. We don't have a timeline. But you guys already know the reputation in terms of, you know, his inability to stay on the court. You add in the hand injury. You add in the pressure. Not only the fact that everybody knows he wants an extension this summer, but that his agent is Rich Paul, who applies as much pressure as anybody in the business. Like, that's just a lot to deal with, you know, for you to not even know if he can help elevate your team down the stretch. And health-wise, it looks like that's very unlikely. So, you know, I don't really see the incentive for a team to really go after him.
Okay. Let's try Michael Porter Jr.
That one's funny because it felt like absolutely. And then the Nets started trying to get it out in the media that they were going to wait. This is, you know, I guess informed speculation, but because we're so early, the speculation part is heavy. Like, I'm going to say that he does get moved. I'm going to call, you know, I'm going to call their bluff on them waiting for, you know, holding on to him past the deadline. Because I think that front office with Sean Marks and their group being good at what they do, they've got to know that his value is pretty high right now. So we talk about all these stars that don't have good value. I think you could do okay with MPJ. So I'll lean towards him getting moved.
And Jonathan Kuminga, I think he just put in an official trade request, I believe. Will Golden State go ahead and make it happen for him, or what's going to happen with Kuminga?
I think they will. We had a long story today detailing his situation, so I'm well in tuned on that one. It's interesting. The Warriors have signaled that they are definitely willing to hold him past the deadline. And, you know, make no mistake, you know, that was not kind of met with positive reviews from Jonathan's camp. They were pretty upset. Next thing you know, you see this stuff with ESPN saying that he requested a trade demand. You know, when I checked in on that this morning, not to make light of it, but it was the Warriors side of things kind of shrugged and basically was like, he's been demanding a trade with his agent every day for the last 2 months. You know, that's how it's been. So, you know, that one is pretty toxic, and but I am going to lean towards them getting something done. The Kings really would like to get their hands on him, and that would have to be in a three-team deal most likely. But I think it could take all the way up until the deadline, and there's going to be a lot of DNPCDs from Jonathan, but, you know, between now and then.
Well, and speaking of the Kings, so Zach LaVine, Malik Monk, their names have been mentioned prominently in trade rumors, or what you think that one of those two or both those guys would be a viable option for Golden State and Kuminga, or I don't know. It seems like a lot of redundancy, but your thoughts?
No, that's another shift in the Warriors side of negotiations is they are now saying they don't want any money past this season. They want expiring contracts in that deal. And then they would love to get their hands on some draft capital. So with that in mind, like your question, Marcus, about Zach and Malik, Malik's got 2 years left on his deal. It's, you know, about 20, 21 million a year. They don't want Malik. And then Zach is even more money. So those two guys aren't happening. It's funny. And I know we'll eventually get to your team. I do think a lot of people are very curious to see what John Horst does with his roster.
You mentioned Rich Paul. Recently, he and the agent for, who was it, Austin Reeves, Reggie Berry, I believe, AMR. They had a, you know, I saw the video. They had a heated, animated discussion. Rich Paul, Sam, is part of a podcast that comes out the same day. He's making comments about players being traded, the Lakers, and then we know his big client, LeBron James. I mean, just your thoughts on, so you got players, Draymond and others, in-season podcasts going on. Now agents are getting involved in podcasts and stirring the pot up a little bit, and maybe even from the leverage standpoint, trying to create whatever they're trying to create. Is this having a negative impact in your mind at all on the game, or is it just a lot of noise?
I can see it having a negative impact on the game. I mean, I can't speak for the Lakers players, but, you know, I think it was a day after Rich's podcast came out, the Lakers rolled through Sacramento and got absolutely smacked by the Kings, which, you know, there were some people around the team who covered the team on a daily basis, you know, talking about the idea that the vibe was off because, you know, people aren't happy with the way that their team's being talked about. Austin is a guy who is pretty universally beloved within that locker room and who is coming up on free agency. And right now the smart money would be on him re-signing with the Lakers at a massive number. But, you know, so if you're him in his camp and all of a sudden the guy who represents LeBron James is positing that they should move you, then, you know, that's not going to sit well. Clearly I need to go see that video. I didn't know there was actually video of that interaction. I had only read about it, but not shocking, you know, but in general, these podcasts and the content world, it is wild. I mean, the other day I was driving home from a game and scrolling through my podcast options on my screen of my car, and I saw that Draymond had discussed the Dennis Schroeder, you know, fight with Luka Doncic, and the, you know, and I was like, all right, I got to hear what, I mean, it's a fight, so I got to hear what Draymond says about the fight, you know, and you've, you know, like they are part of the conversation. And with Rich, even as a final thought there, you know, he's obviously got Anthony Davis, and what I think is so interesting there is that, if Anthony hadn't gotten hurt, you know, I wrote a piece talking about how Rich had already encouraged the Mavericks to be more aggressive and you know, AD's market, right? Well, I think if he was trying to apply even more pressure, then that probably would have come in the form of him being on his podcast and talking about his client, you know? And so all of a sudden, that's a lever that a guy like that can pull.
Sam, I was curious, does this dynamic with Rich Paul having a podcast, Draymond, this dissemination of information, does this change the way that you do your job or you go about your business? I mean, you mentioned, you know, I'm going to tap into Draymond, see what he has to say. Do you do that with everybody? Do you listen to Rich's podcast? Are you kind of like, you know, does this contribute to some of the intel that you may gather, or are you just going with your own sources and you just kind of operate to the beat of your own drummer?
Well, in terms of reporting, you definitely operate to the beat of your own drummer, but you can learn things from these different podcasts that might inform a question that you ask somebody or might compel you to go, you know, like, honestly, I know Draymond pretty well. So let's say I was trying to dig in deeper on the Luka Dennis situation, you know, and if I felt like Draymond sounded like he really knew what happened there, then next time I see Draymond, I might try to talk to him about that topic. You know, there's only so many hours in the day. As you guys know, there's only so much content you can consume. And so I'm not listening to everything. I've got a handful of different places that I'll go. You know, admittedly, I haven't like really tapped into the Rich Paul, Max Kellerman pod. Like I've seen the clips and I've seen, you know, the aggregation of it all. But I kind of love it and I hate it. The part I love is that you do get a level of candor from these high profile people that, you know, that a lot of times you just wouldn't get in the past. But it does kind of floods the market, if you will, when it comes to media.
And I'll tell you what, and this is just a comment. I'm not looking for you know, an observation on my part, not looking for a comment, but Kevin Love is just tailor-made for to be a podcast. I heard him on Cam Jones, I believe, talking about the second apron and the importance of veterans and how that veteran money is now held against the cap. I mean, K-Love was, and Chris and I have been knowing him, you know, for years and years and years, and he's really good. You know, he's really good. But now, small talk. The warm up is over. Let's get to the appetizers are finished. You know, the scallops and the shrimp cocktail and all that pasty. Okay,
but
let's get to the main course. Let's get to the ribeye. The ribeye or the Chilean sea bass, all right?
Oh, it's not a pig anymore?
No.
Well, we moved away from the pig.
The sauteed pork belly, yeah, you know, it was okay. Sauteed pork belly, it was okay. But let's get to the main topic here. I mean, your interview with Giannis, and the first thing that struck me is just Giannis's propensity, maybe the wrong word, but you got him to talk. What's the key? To get a guy, I mean, had you had a prior relationship? Have you gotten to know him over the years? Was this kind of the first time? What's the key to kind of getting a guy like Giannis, who's normally pretty reserved, to kind of open up the way he did? He and these daggone eggs, Sam. I mean, between scramble one day and sunny side up the next day, he got these daggone eggs.
Sam, I am.
These eggs are crazy, Chris. These eggs. One morning, when my wife may love me, the next morning, she may, you know, Giannis and these damn eggs, man. But what's the key to get a guy like Giannis to open up to you like he did, as much as he did?
Yeah, I mean, it's. We've always gotten along pretty well. I mean, the short version of the story is, you know, you go back a number of years and I would try to connect with him on these West Coast trips. And I got to shout out a guy I think that you guys have respect and affection for, my coworker, Eric Name at The Athletic. Like, you know, Eric and I are good friends, and he's got a great rapport with Giannis. And so, to be honest, early on, you know, when I would see Giannis, a lot of times I'd be around Eric, and it's like being at a party, right? Like you got a guy who knows the guy, and that's a little bit of an entry point. And Eric's always been a good team player in terms of kind of helping with that vibe. And so over time, you know, last 3-4 years, Giannis and I have done probably at least one fairly in-depth interview at some point during the season or training camp where, you know, I'm trying to get clarity from him, insight and candor that is just tougher to get in a press conference. And yes, the more comfortable I got with him and the more leeway that he gave me, at times mm-hmm. you do push him to really answer certain questions because he is, you know, he's human. He's guilty of you know, kind of sliding out of certain questions and talking out both sides of his mouth at times. And so this one, the way it came to pass, when you guys were in Sacramento, I went to shoot around, did not talk to him at length, just said hello real quick, but he at least knew that, you know, you kind of remind him that this is where you live. And so I'm here today. That night I see him and I said, hey, a lot of noise around you this year. Like you still got it in you to chop it up and unpack things a bit. And he, you know, he did his playful thing where he plays dumb and he goes, what do you mean lots of noise?
Noise?
You know, yeah.
February 5th?
Yes.
February 5th? Is it?
Yes.
Austin's birthday? No. Okay. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. And he literally even said, false narrative. You know, and I was like, okay, then let's talk about it. So that was Sacramento. I get in San Francisco, and to his credit, you know, he followed through on it, and he could have bailed at any time. As you saw, Marcus, he had his family there. He had some people who were trying, like there was a group with a Greek national team jersey. They were getting that autographed.
Right.
You know, he's just a very wanted guy. But this time my motivation was that, like, some of these press conferences he had done this season, if I'm being honest, had just driven me crazy because his messaging was off. His messaging was kind of, you know, just not real deliberate, not real clear. And so my thing was, let's try to get clarity here. But it's been the reps with him. I was covering that squad all the way on the championship run when the media access, it was a pretty small group of us that had access to him all the time. I was in the bubble when he was in the bubble. I was at the Olympics. This is my favorite Olympics hat I got on today. Like, I gave him a hard time in the Olympics because he didn't do much media, and I was in like, damn, I got to go on the other side of the world and I can't even talk to you, you know? So, but, you know, generally speaking, he's been, you know, nice enough to give him some time. And I did think he was pretty open in our conversation.
And he was open. And I like the fact that you there was one point, I forget the exact dialogue between you two, but I think he said, I don't have control of this situation. You're like, hey, hold up, you know, stop, I'm not gonna let you get away with that. And his response to that, I mean, he seemed like he was pretty cool, and he kind of expounded on his staff and his diversification and his financial term that he used in that particular section. But in the comments, they were like, that was the last thing in the world I expected to read in that interview. But I thought
capital.
I got my venture capital people. Yeah. I got this. I got that. I got this. Yeah. I got that going. Yeah. My chef. I got this. But. I mean, so here's the thing, Sam. I love Giannis. I've been around him for the 12 years I've been with the team. So since he was just turning 20 years old or so, and my perception is, like, you know, he's done everything he can. I mean, to win a championship first time in 50 years, Finals MVP, 50 piece. We know 2-time MVP. Blah 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 blah. I mean, this team we thought maybe we could head in the right direction. Then they lose to Denver without Jokic and Murray. They lose to the T-Wolves without Ant and Gobert. And not just lose, but get booed. It seems to me, this is my opinion, Chris, you can chime in too. I think this just exacerbates the need to make a move other than Giannis, to bring in someone to help this team become a better basketball team. Because I don't know if the current iteration is going to be good enough, quite frankly, to do the things that you're going to need to do to make Giannis happy.
Yeah, no, that's all fair. I mean, to your question of, do I think something happens soon? I'm shocked that I'm even leaving the possibility open for the answer to be yes. When I saw the booing situation in Milwaukee, it just, to me, it felt very much like the type of thing that, you know, he is, I think, a sensitive guy at times. You know, as you guys know, he's eligible for an extension on October 1st. I think you're right that it probably just inspires John to do something significant with the roster. They are trying to really look into everything right now, and the desperation level should be pretty high.
Chris, booing. What your thoughts on that? Have you ever been booed, Chris?
Booed? Yeah. in college. One time it happened. It wasn't at the professional level, but in college. You know, we had a bad game of half against Oregon State while I was at UCLA at home, Pauley Pavilion. It got so bad that Coach Herrick had to put in Bob Myers, former Warriors president, and he put Bob Myers in the game, and Bob Myers ended up scoring 20 points that day, guys.
I remember that. I remember that.
Yes, but this is after the booing, and so the crowd was mainly pissed off because we weren't given the effort. We weren't respecting the four letters. I mean, things that I think Bucks fans were kind of booing for. I think in this instance, Giannis might have took it a little personal, which I can understand because I took it personally as well. I was nowhere near the caliber of player as Giannis, nor did I actually bring a championship to an entire city, although I won a championship, but I was just a small piece of the team. I can understand where Giannis kind of got in his feelings about that situation. It hurts, man. There's nothing like it. It hurts, especially when you love a place. Like, I love the UCLA, and I know Giannis loves Milwaukee. It just sends a shock in your system, I think, when you first hear it.
Yeah.
Good Chris, thing. Not to derail us, I gotta admit, all I can think about now is you saying that they had to put Bob Myers in.
They had to. They had to put him in.
Wave the white flag. Bob, get in there. Yeah.
Hey, no, listen, no. I know Bob well. I can't wait to see Bob again to share this story. But just to put some respect on Bob's name, this is a cool story. One time I had the honor of going with the Warriors. Once a year, and I know I'm getting far afield, they go to San Quentin Prison in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they have a pickup basketball game with inmates as a way to connect with that community. And so I had the honor of covering that pickup game and watching Bob Myers legitimately, like, he dropped like 60 plus.
Wow.
This pickup game. Yeah.
I remember that article.
I'd also know. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
We're
gonna let you go, Sam, but I just want to throw these numbers out here in the context of everything we talked about, and then you know, cleaning the glass, Ben Falk's excellent sight, and the on court numbers with Giannis and Miles are great. Plus 13, 95th percentile. I add KPJ with Giannis and Miles, and KPJ, it's 98th percentile. The differential. The 99th percentile. So I add in Ryan into that mix, and it's still solid. The 99th percentile plus 18.3, AJ plus 18.8, you know, just everything is in a 95th and higher percentile. So then I go to Bobby Portis, Gary Trent II, and Kyle Kuzma. It's a minus 19.3, the second percentile. And so, and yeah, you figure it out. I'm just throwing out information. Listen, Sam, I don't want you to comment.
Yeah.
You got a comment? It's fine. If not, I'm just throwing out information, man. That's all. I'm just presenting information.
I've kind of lost the plot with the Bucks in terms of who to blame anymore. I really have. Like, you know, if you ask me in a vacuum, like Bobby Portis, especially, and to a lesser degree, Kyle, like, Bobby's a championship player, sure, man. Like, he's, you know, he's a talented ball player and a guy who was part of what they did a few years back. And so it doesn't make sense, but it's not pretty. And I guess to the original point, like, that is where there's probably still, you know, a fair amount of concern for Bucks fans, is that if the puzzle pieces just aren't working, then I think this story probably ends the way they don't want it to end.
Yeah, and it's not a slight on individual players, but collectively sometimes the pieces just aren't working how you need them to work to be successful. And that's the only point I'm making. Right. Sam Amick, look, man, The Athletic, you do a great job. Keep up the great work. The Athletic, man, you guys are really, really
Yeah, y'all kill it. Y'all crush it.
Y'all kill it.
Thank you, guys.
Seriously, I mean, this is just...
Seriously. Avengers. Y'all got like the Avengers going.
Yeah, it first came out, I'm like,
I appreciate it. See, I'm rocking the swag today.
Okay. We thank you, and hopefully we'll run into you further down the road when whatever happens.
Absolutely.
Can have you back on. Thank you, Sam Amick of The Athletic. Thank you so much. All right, welcome back here, District. Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, Fantastic Voyage. We love our last guest, Sam Amick, had some great insights on impending free agency, his relationship with Giannis, and all kinds of good stuff. So we thank Sam Amick.
Yeah, and for Bucks fans out there that want more of Here District, you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, or if you can watch live episodes on the official Milwaukee Bucks YouTube channel, subscribe, throw them a follow, and you will tap in and connect with the Here District, me and MJ, all day, every day.
Yeah, man, and this is an interesting time of year. It's the middle part of January, heading into the trade deadline, which is February 5th, which Giannis in that interview with Sam Amick didn't know what the significance of February 5th was, but that's a whole other story. But one of the things, Chris, that we touched on really, really gingerly with Sam, but I want to get into a little bit more with you. And so I was talking about cleaning the glass, the great site of statistical analytical information Ben Falk puts up. They drown out the noise, the blowouts and all that stuff. So it's really meaningful kinds of stats. And so, Chris, I was interested to see just season long kind of what the trends were in terms of different combinations on court. And so I didn't know what to expect, but I found something really interesting to me. And let's see what you think. So first I did Giannis and Miles, you know, and because Miles is taking some consideration, criticism, taking some heat based on his performance. And everybody wants to lump Dame's salary with Miles's and 50 million. That's not fair.
That's not fair.
He's getting 50 million a year and we get 12 points a game. What the heck? That's not the same. But when I look at Miles and Giannis, the combination of them on court, Chris, they're a plus 13 differential, the difference between offense and defense. That's the 95th percentile. Their points per possession offensively, the 97th percentile, 126. Effective field goal percentage, 100th percentile, 63%. You know, can't get better than that, 100th percentile. Free throw rate, 78%. Defensively, solid, 73rd percentile and defensive rating. Effective field goal percentage defensively, 78th percentile, which is really good. The offensive rebounding defensively is could be better. It could be a lot better, just 13.1%, 21st percentile. But so that's those two. Then I add KPJ to the mix, thinking that might throw it off a little bit. But the differential goes up, Chris, to 22.5. Yeah. 99th percentile. So I said, well, maybe it's Ryan Rollins, and that maybe that's not flowing properly, that mix of four players. Differential stays at the 99th percentile. So I said, let me throw AJ in the mix, maybe because he's an undersized small forward, and maybe that's causing some issues. No, that even goes up, 18.8 differential with AJ on the floor, 330 possessions, that starting unit. So it's not that five. That's the issue. So I said, well, let me look at the bench. Let's go to the bench and see what's going on. So I just did three guys that play a lot together with the bench unit, Bobby, Gary Trent Jr., and Kyle Kuzma. And it's a minus 19.3 differential. That's the second percentile. That's as low pretty much as you can get without being the first of the zeros percentile. Then offensively, 109.5 points per possession, 12th percentile. Effective field goal percentage, 19th percentile. Defensively, they give it up, Chris, almost 129 points per 100 possessions. That's the second percentile. Effective field goal percentage is a whopping 59%+. That's the third percentile. And so, and look, as we talked about that previous segment, this is no knock on one specific guy. I'm not picking on Kyle or Bobby. I mean, Kyle has had great moments. You know, we've talked about him, and Giannis has commended him for subjugating, you know, his individual abilities for the good of the team. Bobby's played really well, especially recently, leading the league in 3-point field goal percentage for a stretch there. Gary Trent Jr. hadn't had a kind of shooting season that we like, but he's had his moments. So the bench could be better. Just your observations from watching this team play.
Well, you have to put the stock in the data, and especially the numbers that you're throwing out of how guys play with Giannis, five-man lineups, four-man, three-man. Like, that stuff matters. Combinations are, like, the most important thing probably in the NBA in terms of rotation, who plays with who, when, et cetera, how they do when guys aren't on the floor. So you're drilling down into arguably the most important sort of tactical stuff there is in the NBA. So my thing with that is it's obvious that certain combinations, it's just like, you know, recipe, right? Certain ingredients, you mix them together, MJ, the stuff don't taste good. And so that's sort of what you have with this Bucks team. Like, salt tastes good by itself, pepper tastes good by itself, garlic salt tastes good by itself, but it don't taste good in oatmeal. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's sort of that concept that you have with the Bucks, where you got
that is brilliant, my son.
You got guys that on standalone are talented and work and they have game, and you know, you see them, you be like, yeah, man, dang. But it's not making sense into the dish, you know, to the recipe or whatever you want to say. So that's what I see. I've been disappointed this year. You know, I expected more out of Gary Trent Jr., just some more consistency from the shooting perspective, even defensive on the defensive side of things. But to get back to your original thing about, you know, what must be done or what needs to happen for the Bucks to upgrade the roster, it's obvious that we need to upgrade the roster and get some guys that fit within the current puzzle the best. So you got to get pieces that can seamlessly integrate themselves into the roster, into a rotation, and then have a positive net. That's just it to me. And it's hard to pinpoint those guys. It's hard to, you know, say who is who, what's what, but it's obvious at 17 and 22 or whatever the record is and whatever the date and whatever the data says that the iteration, this current iteration of the Bucks has not been working.
And let me throw this out there before we go into our video breakdown about that action. Let me just throw this out there. Pete Nance, and I know it's the G League with the Wisconsin Herd, just had a 42-point game with the G League team. Pete Nance. And I like him. I think he's, you know, 25, 26 years old, big-bodied, smart, position guy, can shoot the three. So, and to your point, I mean, you've got to, whether it's going to be external brought in or internal, make some shifts and changes, you know, I just think that there's something that needs to be done because it's just not, anytime you lose the way this team did to Denver without Jokic, without Jamal Murray, and then the Peyton Watsons and these other guys of the world, and Tim Hardaway Jr., I mean, they have these season high nights against you, then Minnesota without Ant-Man, you know, without Ant-Man and Gobert, you're down 38-20 in the first quarter. It's like, what the hell's going on?
But I mean, MJ, how about you lose to the Kings at home and you lost to the Wizards twice. on a janky, remember that first one? That first loss, it was like one of the jankiest, like how y'all lose to them? Yeah. And so it's kind of the proof is in the pudding, like, you know, that current group, that combination of guys in that locker room for some reason isn't working together. So you got to try to figure something out. Hopefully Horst will be aggressive and make moves during the deadline. But, you know, again, you just, you know, got to wait to see. Horst,
fantastic voyage, man. That's what it's all about. So I talked about the Minnesota Timberwolves, about that action. Let's take a look at some of the plays from that T-Wolves debacle at home that had the fans booing. Doc had an interesting observation. Giannis refuted it a bit. Doc talked about tired legs because of all the travel and the road. And he, Doc even made the point, and this is crazy, is that initially the scheduling had us playing the T-Wolves on a Tuesday and then flying down and playing the Spurs on a Wednesday. But Doc said that his staff got that changed, give them just a space, a day in between, just to rest and recuperate. But the tired legs thing. What's your take?
I will say this with the new TV deal, right? And how the games and all the scheduling and how everything's kind of broken up. I have noticed some scheduling quirks. I'm not sure you're aware, but the Bulls are going to play the Heat three times in a row. Wow. I think. Yeah, it's coming up because something happened with the condensation of the arena and they had to. But so there's a lot of like little interesting scheduling quirks going on during the season. But again, everybody's going through it and the Bucks are no different. Like, you still got to adjust, adapt, and respond.
Well, you know, I'm from the days of playing three games and three nights and four games.
And flying commercial. And flying commercial.
Four games in 3 days. No.
But y'all flew commercial too, right? Y'all flying commercial?
I had to take the first flight out the next morning.
Regular plane. Did y'all have cigarettes on the plane?
Cigarette smoke on the plane. And
like, what the world? What on earth is going on?
Yeah, give me another martini. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, so. It's 8 o'clock at night somewhere. You know, so we had a lot of that going on back in the day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But let's look at about that action. Let's take a look at a couple of these Minnesota Timberwolves plays, because the T-Wolves lit the Bucks up from the 3-point line and things started out okay. Dylan, you can roll the beginning sequence of that game in terms of Bucks energy. Here's a nice job, active hands by AJ, gets the Bucks out and running, and great job by Giannis making the extra pass. I mean, instead of Bobby Portis got the start because Miles Turner was out with illness. So, so any observations on this play?
Good run, good movement. I was just thinking though, when Doc talked about the tired legs, and the thing about tired legs, MJ, tired legs look real good in the first two quarters. And then you start to see how tired your legs are in the second half. And so what you see from the Bucks is the lack of a sustained effort. I mean, they kind of died out in this first quarter, sort of after the first 8 or 9 minutes. And then, you know, Minnesota kind of started pulling away and you kind of saw the effect. So if Doc says, and this is kind of, I'm from this camp. If the coach is saying our guys got tired legs, he knows what time it is. He's keeping track. He understands, you know, his team. And so I would put a little into that. The issue is, okay, so what? Your team has tired legs. What about the reinforcements? And we should have reinforcements that don't have tired legs that could adequately, you know, do the job while tired legs got to sit.
And trust me, you know, that if Doc has that observation, the opponent's also aware of the scheduling and how this team, team is right now. So let's keep the pressure off. Play fast, make them have to move, spread the court out, make them have to defend, all that good stuff that's going to make those tired legs put more stress on those tired legs. All right, next play, Dylan. All right, here's a nice job. Giannis gets doubled, and that's good. Good ball rotation. Good job by KPJ of getting off the basketball. Sometimes, you know, situations like that, you know, I retract that. Those kinds of situations, he's really good at making sure that he makes that next pass.
Yeah, great flow, great offensive flow. And this is part of the stuff, like, you know, you wish the Bucks could just establish and play in the entire game, you know what I mean? Without having to get bogged down offensively, half court sets, you know, stick in the, you know, the ball sticks in Giannis's hands on the elbow. Hey, five guys, nobody's in the key, and we're whipping that thing around the perimeter. I love possessions like that. Look, watch Giannis on this possession. Watch how Giannis brings his man out, makes it difficult for Naz Reid to really go and commit from a help side perspective, and then that ends up breaking the integrity of the defensive shell. Watch it. Boom. You see how he doesn't dive down on that, and Giannis kind of pulls out. I mean, that's live offense. Again, sustained efforts though, MJ. It's not about one play. Like, when we take one play, you look at it in a vacuum, okay, it looks great, but it's sustaining these type of efforts possession after possession over 48 minutes.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. Move on, Dylan. So there's a wide open three. Spock Bones. Bones Highland had a huge game that night, but Ryan Wallace did a nice job. Takes a flip, and now you got your plan. You know, four defenders against five offensive players,
But MJ, to your point about if Doc made that observation, other teams would make that observation too. This is one of those moments. Soon as they score the basketball, watch how quickly guys are getting it out and getting it up. Look, they're playing like they've been told, hey, let's push it on makes. Let's make sure that we get, you know, we try to keep the pressure in and keep them on their heels and transition off of made baskets.
And if we can, Dylan, if we can stop it right when Julius Randle gets the ball. So Ryan goes down. It's 5-on-4. I'm just trying to see why Randle was so kicked right there, right there.
He's out.
And that's just beautiful. And you know, I mean, should Giannis be?
Yes. More from Giannis for sure defensively. Yeah. It goes without saying. I said it a few months ago, but you know, it didn't go over well on the pod. But I Giannis has to do more defensively as far as giving, you know, getting over there, making those game changing plays, MJ, that only he can.
Yeah. And on this play, it's a subtle thing. It's just maybe taking another step or two inside, protecting the paint, shrinking the court. And you see the Ryan does a good job getting back in the play, but there's a lane that a bus could drive through for Julius Randle going straight to the basket, you know, and you know, so anyway.
Take that foul. Yeah, take that foul.
Something, but just be there. Be in position to be more of a factor on this drive. And that's just way too easy. And that breaks down your defense, but also more importantly, breaks down the morale of you as a team when guys are making easy layups like that. So, all right, that's enough of that. Next play, here's Bones Highland. And again, not only a nice job by Highland driving, but then you give up the offensive rebound. He misses that wide open layup. Not wide open. It was a little bit under duress. Misses that layup, but then nobody boxes out. Cal comes over to help. Gary Trent Jr. is just slow.
It's on Gary Trent Jr. He's got to make that play. He's got to make the box out. He's in position. You know, and these are – but, again, attention to detail, sustaining efforts.
Right.
It's been a Bucks issue.
And our point is not like – even if Gary Trent takes a foul and just hip checks that offensive rebounder, just but got to get a piece of his body. You can't run behind him. That's my point.
Yeah.
You can't run behind him. You got to run into him, if nothing else, dislodge him, make the official call that foul, and you may get away with it, but you've got to be better at finding that body and making better contact. So the little things, man. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, look, man, it's been a good show. Thanks again to Sam Amick. Some great insights and great discussion about the Bucks. And hey, it's that fantastic voice. It's still this team. I heard someone on a podcast recently, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I mean, as struggling as this season has been, this team is only 4 or 5 games out of like the sixth spot in the Eastern Conference. So nobody's running away with this thing. You could still turn it around, play better basketball. You could make some moves, play better basketball, but it's not a lost cause is my point. There's still room for this team to make a move and not shock the basketball world, but a lot of people are writing the Bucks off right now, but I am not at that point yet. I still think this thing can be turned around and we'll see how it goes, Chris. So, all right, man, fantastic voyage, man. The Here District. We'll see you next time.